Chapter 1. San Francisco, California, January 1872. Thomas was drifting off with his feet perched on the edge of a roll-top desk, when a brick smashed through the front window of the Chronicle office and hit his editor on the head. It was probably intended for him, Thomas thought, as he jumped to his feet. Everyone knew he sat at the window desk in the afternoon, because he liked to observe the parade of well-fed Poles who spilled out of City Hall on their way to the saloons and chop-houses that lined the muddy street in both directions. Today, however, Andrew Witten had arrived early and laid claim to the front desk. The longtime editor of the paper had a feeling in his bones something bad was going to happen as a consequence of publishing Thomas's blistering expose of Colin P. Stafford, one of the richest and most powerful men in California. He settled into Thomas's chair, poured his fourth cup of coffee, and added a slug of brandy for medicinal purposes. Then he unfolded yesterday's edition of the Chronicle and shook his head at the audacious banner headline he himself had written. Captain of Industry or Nefarious Villain? Who is the real Colin P. Stafford? Special to the Chronicle for T.E.S. Bayside. The editor splashed another finger of brandy into his coffee and read Thomas's article for the 10th time. He had hesitated to hire the young reporter, mostly because of the fame he had garnered at the Battle of Pebble Creek Ridge in the last week of the war. A celebrity with no journalistic skill was the last thing the struggling daily newspaper needed. Retired Colonel Thomas Edward Scoundrel was a household name, recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor, confidant of President Ulysses S. Grant, and the luckiest damn fool gambler Witten had ever known. He also had an appetite for fine food, rare wine, and finely turned ankles that the gray-haired newspaper man was certain would be his undoing. When Thomas mounted the wooden steps of the newspaper's cluttered office that first morning, however, Witten made a quick head-to-toe assessment and figured the smart thing to do would be to tell the ex-soldier that the reporter position had been filled. It wasn't so much his dress or general demeanor that caused the editor to bite down hard on the cold stub of cigar that always dangled from his mouth. In fact, his wife would probably have found the lean, broad-shouldered fellow with wavy brown hair, dark hazel eyes, and tanned open face to be downright handsome. Witten allowed as how he would cede that point to her. The editor didn't give a damn what he looked like, but when Thomas opened the door and walked towards him with a pronounced limp, alarm bells went off in Witten's head. There was no profit in hiring cripples. A moment later, he discerned that the former soldier could barely raise his left arm, and his decision was complete. He cleared his throat and prepared to deliver the bad news. Then, almost as if he knew what was coming, Thomas reached out to take Witten's hand. He shook his head slowly, and a sly smile creased his face. The editor was a good judge of character. He saw cleverness and confidence in the young colonel's eyes, two of the most important traits a good reporter should possess. Witten had been in the newspaper business long enough to know that no amount of education or formal training could instill or hone those qualities in a person. You either had them at birth or you didn't. Perhaps there was more to Thomas Scoundrel after all. They sat down, and Thomas immediately told the editor that his physical impairments were temporary. He'd gotten busted up 3 weeks ago when his horse was spooked by a rattlesnake and bucked him into a scramble of rocks and sagebrush in the Sierra foothills. Broke his collarbone, cracked a few ribs, and sustained a clean fracture of his lower right leg. Compared to the wounds he suffered in the war, it wasn't much, he assured the newspaper man, and damned if Witten didn't find himself nodding in agreement. So, despite his serious reservations about the colonel's fitness for the job, he offered to give Scoundrel a trial. Of course, he half expected the man would grab his hat and head out the door when he learned about the meager salary, grueling hours, and short deadlines he would have to accept. That's what most of the other applicants had done. Not Thomas. He set about learning everything he could from Witten and the other Chronicle reporters, peppering them with such a flurry of questions for the first few days that the editor finally sent him out on his first assignment just to get some peace. "I won't let you down," Thomas promised. He grabbed a notebook and a handful of pencils and limped out the door towards City Hall, where the origins of every good tale of corruption, greed, lust, and general calumny was waiting to be discovered by those wily enough to pry information out of the hangers-on who skittered like cockroaches towards the smallest tidbits of gossip. For the next several weeks, Thomas tramped every street, alley, hill, and neighborhood in the booming city. He met with silver miners who struck it rich in the Comstock Lode, and with stock speculators who became even richer by trading shares in mining concerns without once dirtying their hands. He lunched in private clubs with shipping magnates and drank and gambled in waterfront saloons with the sailors who manned the square-rigged China trade clippers they owned. From bar rooms to bedposts, and from a Chinese restaurant owned by a chef trained in classic French cuisine, to the dockside taverns frequented by the burly stevedores who offloaded hundreds of tons of cargo from ships each day, Thomas learned to view the living, breathing city of San Francisco through the eyes of a journalist in search of the next big story. Witten was pleased to see how quickly his new reporter was learning to navigate the tangle of information, people, and places that made up the city. And he came to trust Scoundrel, even though he never believed that his injuries had been caused by a fall from a horse. That conclusion was cemented after seeing Thomas ride a lightning-fast thoroughbred to victory in the 4th of July Founders race. Busted up or not, Thomas could teach the Comanche a thing or two about horsemanship, which was the most complimentary thing you could say about a man's saddle skills in the West. Witten had a hunch about where Thomas's instincts could best be employed, and from day one he sent the fledgling reporter to comb the seedy underbelly of the city for stories that would shock and titillate readers from the mansions of Nob Hill to the ruckus saloons in the Tenderloin. To hide Thomas's real identity, they assigned him a byline to use in articles in place of his real name. The readers of San Francisco's second largest daily newspaper came to know him simply as T.E.S. Bayside. The Bayside series about the Christmas Eve murder of three prostitutes in the warehouse district and the frantic search for their killer was the first indication of how popular Thomas was going to be. He followed those stories up with an article about arson fires in Chinatown and the arrest of a police captain who managed to embarrass the city's corrupt police commissioner with the amount of protection money he squeezed from small businesses. Witten was impressed by Thomas's snappy, energetic prose style and tongue-in-cheek wit. Chronicle readers felt the same way, and the editor was delighted by the steady increase in sales. The publication of yesterday's front-page article about Colin P. Stafford saw two special editions of the paper sell out in a matter of hours. As he reread Thomas's scathing detail of Stafford's ties to all manner of criminal activity, he was also painfully aware of the personal and professional liability he had opened himself up to when he gave the go-ahead for Thomas to spend 2 months researching and writing the story. The article detailed how Stafford fixed railroad freight prices, how he brutally crushed competitors in timber, cattle ranching, mining, sugar processing, and shipping, and it alluded to the cadre of judges, sheriffs, and legislators who were on his payroll. Stafford also owned the Evening Standard, the only other newspaper in town. The editor had no doubt the Standard would rebut every word of Thomas's article in today's edition, but, for the moment at least, the Chronicle owned the news business in San Francisco. He was turning to congratulate his star reporter when the red brick shattered the window, and knocked him out of his chair. Thomas drew a .36 caliber pocket Navy revolver from inside his jacket and raced to the broken window. He looked up and down the wide boardwalk, but there was no one in sight. A typesetter rushed into the office from the back room, followed by the paper's distribution and sales manager. Thomas motioned for them to retreat into their offices and then kneeled beside Witten. The editor lay curled on his side with one arm crooked protectively around his head. The brick struck him squarely on the crown and a stream of blood was flowing onto the wooden floor. Thomas had seen plenty of head wounds in the war, and he knew that because the skin around the scalp was so thin, there was no relationship between the amount of blood and the severity of the injury. He pulled a handkerchief from his coat and pressed it against the gash while keeping his revolver at the ready.
"What the hell was that?"
mumbled Witten. "Take your pick," Thomas replied. "Jealous husband? A barman we owe money to, or—"
"Stafford,"
said the editor.
"Help me get up."
Thomas slipped his revolver into his coat and helped Witten to his chair. He kept the cloth pressed against the wound and whistled for the men in the back room to join them. A minute later, the typesetter was trotting down the boardwalk to fetch a doctor. Thomas held the brandy-laced coffee to the editor's mouth and watched him take a deep drink. Witten's eyes were clear, and he didn't seem confused, both good signs that he had not suffered a brain injury. He'd have one hell of a headache, but that and a few stitches would be the worst of it. For now, at least.
"Apparently we have our first review of the article you did about Stafford," said Witten as he took the handkerchief from Thomas and held it against his wound.
"Were you expecting this?" Witten managed a weak smile.
"I once watched a bull elk in full rut take on two cows, one right after another. It was a beautiful October morning. Everything orange and green, quiet as a church, too, until that bull decided it was time to scratch his itch and began to bugle. He peed all over himself to make his perfume irresistible to the ladies, and then he mounted one, thrust a few times, and then sidled right over and climbed on board the other one. I was behind a bush about 50 yards from them, and all of a sudden I let out a loud sneeze, and damned if that monster didn't swing his antlers in my direction whilst he was still giving it to the first cow. The look in his eyes told me the instant he climbed down off her rump I was going to have 700 pounds of angry elk trampling my own backside. I made it to where my horse was tied in about 3 seconds and flew out of there."
"And you think Stafford is like that bull elk?"
"He is in his prime. And when it comes to the way he attacks his competitors, yes, he is always in the rut. Although, when he's done with them, they don't have quite the same smile on their faces as those cows did."
Witten looked into Thomas's eyes.
"The big difference is that Stafford didn't have to pee on himself. We did that for him."
Thomas sat down and laid his hand on Witten's forearm. "I have placed you and everyone here in danger," he said. "I was so eager to get the goods on that bastard that I didn't think about the possible consequences. I am sorry, my friend." Witten snorted.
"We're newspaper men, Thomas. Our job is to ferret out the truth and tell it as best we can to the people of this city. Sometimes that means taking a few lumps."
"And now you've taken yours. I just don't want to see you bashed in the head again." Witten opened a desk drawer and pulled out a fresh handkerchief. He dropped the blood-soaked rag in a wastebasket and held the clean cloth against the wound.
"My wife and Stafford's wife are first cousins,"
said the editor.
"They're good friends, well, at least they were until your article, and they mix in the same society circles. No, I won't be the target of Stafford's revenge. We both know you should have been sitting here at this desk today. That brick was supposed to take you out, so I want you to disappear for a while. Lay low and watch your back."
The front door swung open and the typesetter rushed in with the doctor in tow. Thomas patted the revolver in his jacket.
"I'll be cautious," he said, "but I'll also be close by."